Cut the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. My name is Josh Parcell. Thank you guys so much for listening. Today's episode will be my first edition of the JP Top 10 on the podcast. Now, if you've been following CFBCountry.com, you know that every week I do the JP Top 10. Used to be the JP Top 25. I've condensed it down into just the 10 best teams in college football. And quite honestly, I don't think there's 25 teams worth talking about right now in college football. There is such a separation between the best teams at the top of the top 25 and the rest. So we're going to do the top 10, the JP Top 10, in this podcast. Let me know what you think. I want to do it every Monday. I want to do this as your first edition of the pod every week. Just break down the 10 best teams in college football, and then we'll get to plenty of other storylines throughout the week. I want to apologize for last week. Some technical difficulties kept us from having a podcast on Friday. Was going to have Kelly in Vegas. Kelly Stewart, if you know her, at Kelly in Vegas on Twitter. And, of course, Rossi Three Stacks to give the picks. Didn't work out, but of course, I had the picks up on CFBCountry.com either way. Make sure you guys are going to rate and review the podcast. I want you guys rating, reviewing, 5 stars if you can. And remember, leave your favorite college football player of all time as the name. That has been the best part. I've seen so many great ones. Lusaka Polite might be the leader right now in the clubhouse. There have been so many good ones. And we've got only about 40 reviews to go before we hit 150, and I will award a one-time $25 Amazon gift card to the winner. So make sure you guys are checking that out. But now let's get on to the podcast. This is the JP Top 10. Now, before we get started, if you have not checked out the website before, you don't know how this works. This is not who I think are the 10 best teams in college football in that order. This is who I think have the best 10 resumes. So I'm taking out any preseason expectations. I'm taking out any recruiting rankings. I don't care about any of that. I don't care what we thought these teams were going to be. I don't care what we think they're going to be going forward. I care about what they've done to this point. Because as smart as I am, even I can't predict the future. Okay, there's a reason why Vegas makes a lot of money. It's because we don't know what's going to happen next week. We don't know what's going to happen in 2 weeks. We're usually wrong. So instead of allowing myself to maybe be wrong, I'm just going to take a look at what we've done so far, what the teams have accomplished through the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, and I'm going to rank them accordingly. So these are the 10 best resumes on paper in college football so far this season. That's why you're going to see some teams who are missing, maybe some teams who are in the top 10 that might surprise you. Just keep in mind, I'm judging these teams on what they've done so far this season. Two teams that are not in the top 10 that might catch your attention. I'm going to start with them. Clemson, not a top 10 team right now. What has Clemson done this season to earn a top 10 ranking? Absolutely nothing. This team barely escaped against Texas A&M on the road. Texas A&M lost to Alabama by over 20 points. Everybody loses to Alabama by over 20 points. I get it. But then they turn around and only beat Arkansas by 7. Now, the Aggies jumped out to a 17-0 lead against Arkansas on Saturday and then let the Razorbacks come back to make that a game. So as the A&M win starts to look a little bit worse, as the Aggies start to backslide a little bit, I'm going to take a little bit of credit away from Clemson going on the road to beat A&M. And other than that, you got some real issues here. I mean, this team barely got by Syracuse. Of course, Trevor Lawrence was out, but Trevor Lawrence was in the game, and they were down 13-7. So Clemson was losing to Syracuse with Trevor Lawrence, and then, of course, came back to beat the Orange without him as Travis Etienne went crazy. I'll talk plenty more about Clemson on Wednesday night's podcast with Kyle Bailey, so stick around for that. We'll get into Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence, the whole nine yards. But Clemson right now, nothing on this resume tells me it's a top 10 team. By the end of the season, could they be? Sure, absolutely. They need to start to look more dominant against a very average ACC. They got NC State coming up in a couple weeks. And then, of course, Florida State and South Carolina at the end of the season. Although it feels like we don't even need to include Florida State in that conversation anymore. I'm still going to. I'm going to die on that hill. I think Florida State's still got talent. I don't know when Willie Taggart's going to figure it out, but I do think that Florida State, on paper, has as much talent as anybody in the ACC other than Clemson. So we're going to go to number 11 real quick, Washington. Washington not in the top 10, although they're very close. Look, this team nearly knocked off Auburn, but Auburn's starting to look a little shakier. So that loss, while still a good loss, isn't quite the elite loss that maybe it looked like in week one. Jake Browning, 8 touchdowns, 4 interceptions this season. Just, I don't understand. He had 43-9 2 years ago. Just has not looked anywhere close to the quarterback he was 2 seasons ago. They have got a very tough schedule coming up, and they are the favorites in the Pac-12, in a pretty watered-down Pac-12, I should add. They play at UCLA next. That should be an easy win. And then they play Oregon, Colorado, Cal, and Stanford in 4 straight weeks. At Oregon, Colorado at home, at Cal, Stanford. Washington has to get through that slate without losing, or the Pac-12 is going to be in real trouble. Okay, right now, Washington and Stanford are the only teams in the Pac-12 left with a legitimate shot at the playoff. And, of course, Stanford and Washington will play one another at the end of that stretch. But Washington right now is the favorite, has to get through a very, very tough slate. 4-game stretch there coming up through mid-October, early November. Now let's get to the top 10. Number 10, Penn State. I was thoroughly impressed with the Nittany Lions for just about 4 quarters on Saturday night in Happy Valley against Ohio State. You'll see where I have Ohio State ranked in a little bit. When you lose by 1 point to an elite team, I cannot drop you very far. Penn State still looked to me like a top 10 team. Honestly, 10 might even be a little low for them right now, but they did collapse. They had the game in hand, almost a 2-touchdown lead over the Buckeyes. Let Ohio State come back. Second straight year that's happened, ending in a 1-point loss. Of course, the last play of the game, or the last call of the game that mattered, was the 4th down decision by James Franklin to hand it off, run essentially a draw play on 4th and 5. I know it was a bad call. I know he's going to get raked over the coals for it all week, and deservedly so. Penn State had a chance to make a play late, and instead they took the ball out of the hands of Trace McSorley. McSorley is a guy who finished the game with 461 yards of offense, and 93% of Penn State's total offense came from Trace McSorley. That doesn't seem like a recipe for taking the ball out of his hands at the end of the game. However, Penn State's such an interesting team because 2 years ago, they block a field goal against Ohio State, return it for a touchdown. The entire fortune of their season switches in an instant, and they end up making a Rose Bowl against USC, winning the Big Ten. Had they not beaten Ohio State 2 years ago, this team almost certainly would have finished 9-3 at best, maybe even 8-4. And we're talking about them in the Outback Bowl. We're not talking about Penn State as one of the elite programs in the Big Ten anymore. Yet, because of that game, Penn State all of a sudden became one of the preeminent teams in the Big Ten. They, of course, followed it up last season with another great year, thanks to Saquon Barkley, no less. And now here they are sitting in this mix of Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, and, of course, themselves as that conglomerate of powers in the Big Ten East. I think Penn State right now deserves to be the second-best team in the Big Ten East. They certainly looked like it on Saturday, but it's fascinating because James Franklin, after the game, said, "We are a great team, and we're content being great. We're comfortable being great, and I want to be elite." And he's not going to stop until Penn State is an elite program. I actually love James Franklin, and I know James Franklin is going to get criticized for the call. If you go check out a video of James Franklin kind of approaching a fan who was heckling him as he walked off the field, criticizing the play call. That doesn't bother me. Emotional moment. James Franklin didn't do anything wrong. He looked at the kid. He said, "I appreciate your input." And then he kind of stepped over to him. Nothing was ever going to happen. He didn't threaten the kid. It's going to be overblown, I'm sure, in Happy Valley this week. Not a big deal. What I loved is James Franklin telling the Penn State fans, "We're not comfortable being great." Or he's not comfortable being great. He wants to be elite, and he wants this team and program to be elite. I think James Franklin is a heck of a salesman. He's a heck of a recruiter. There's no secrets about that. That's stating the obvious. Joe Moorhead changed the complexion of this team. Saquon Barkley changed the complexion of this franchise. And now James Franklin has got to try to build on that. And from a recruiting standpoint, they've been outstanding. They've got a top 10 class coming in. They've had top 10 classes each of the last few years. The talent is consistently getting better at Penn State. And I think the Nittany Lions are headed in the absolute right direction, even though it may sting today losing their second straight game to Ohio State by 1 point. This team is right on the precipice of greatness, and James Franklin realizes that. Number 9 is going to be the Auburn Tigers. Now, Auburn is hanging on by a thread right now because they're pretty much hanging their hat on that Washington win, which is that enough right now? Because the Huskies did rebound against BYU and look really, really impressive. There was a moment in time where I was starting to be concerned a lot about Washington. The BYU win was good for them, but Auburn itself not really taking care of business. This is a team that on Saturday night really, really struggled in a game against Southern Miss. Southern Miss actually had the ball down one possession in the fourth quarter. Auburn ended up pulling away to win 24-13. But this is a team that on offense has really has struggled most of the season. I mean, they put up 21 against Washington, 21 against LSU. Now, those are two great defenses. I get it. 34 against Arkansas, that's fine. But North Texas scored over 40. And then only 24 against Southern Miss. Jarrett Stidham has never really found his footing this season at quarterback. And that's really hurting Auburn's offense. If we know anything about Gus Malzahn, we know they need a quarterback, an elite quarterback, to be able to run that offense. When he has not had elite quarterback play, Auburn has not looked very dominant at any point. They've looked very, very human when they don't get great quarterback play. And right now, Jarrett Stidham not really getting it done. And for Auburn, you look at their schedule coming up. They take on Mississippi State on the road. Then they have Tennessee. And then at Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and then at Georgia and at Alabama. That's the rest of their SEC schedule. So Mississippi State doesn't look as bad nearly as it did maybe a few weeks ago. The Bulldogs are struggling mightily right now. Tennessee at home, that should be a win. At Ole Miss, probably a win, but then A&M, Georgia, and Bama. Of course, Georgia and Bama are going to knock them off. Auburn will not be a factor in the SEC, okay? I think they're going to get through those next four games in the conference, but with the offense playing the way it has, it wouldn't surprise me if Mississippi State rebounded. They're a team in desperation mode. They are at home against Auburn. That game's in Starkville. I could see Mississippi State giving Auburn trouble. And then, of course, like I said, the Georgia-Alabama stretch at the end, you even want to throw in Texas A&M, who has to come to Jordan-Hare. Auburn will not be a factor in the SEC. I think this team smells like 8-4, maybe 9-3. Gus Malzahn got a heck of a contract. You want to talk about one play? We just mentioned it a minute ago with Penn State. This team, if Gus Malzahn and Auburn lose that game to LSU 2 years ago when Les Miles was fired the next day, that would have been Malzahn. Malzahn would have been fired almost certainly if Auburn had lost to LSU 2 years ago when they won on the final play. And instead, now Gus Malzahn has almost a $50 million contract, and basically Auburn's content going 9-3 most years, because that's pretty much where this program is at right now. They can contend with Alabama every now and then. Of course, they did beat Alabama a year ago and Georgia, but most years, this Auburn team probably not at the same level of Alabama, of Georgia. And there's some teams in the rest of the SEC that are starting to catch up to them as well. Number eight, West Virginia. Now, the West Virginia Mountaineers, this is a team that it's hard to figure them out because on paper, they have three good wins. They've beaten Tennessee, Kansas State, and then Texas Tech on Saturday. Here's the thing. None of those are great wins. And a lot of teams in the top 10 have a great win. Even Auburn right behind West Virginia, Auburn beat Washington. That's a much better win than anything West Virginia can say. Tennessee is an awful team right now. Kansas State is a below-average team in the Big 12. Texas Tech, below-average team in the Big 12. Although the Red Raiders did beat Oklahoma State a few weeks ago. So the best win probably for West Virginia is Texas Tech. I don't know what to make of the Mountaineers yet. And honestly, we won't know what to make of them for another month. Their next three games are Kansas, Iowa State, and Baylor. Iowa State's a trickier one. Baylor is getting better, but still should not be able to contend with West Virginia. Matt Rule's done a nice job. They're not on West Virginia's level. Certainly not able to stop that offense. They just give up 66 to Oklahoma. West Virginia is the number eight team because they've thoroughly beaten a couple decent teams. Good wins, not great wins. They did win by 8 against Texas Tech. That was the closest game they've had. So they've won every game by at least a touchdown. Will Greer playing out of his mind. 370 yards, 17 touchdowns, 3 picks. He's absolutely in the Heisman race. I would put him behind guys like, of course, Tua Tagovailoa. I would put him behind Kyler Murray. But he's in that mix, and he's going to have a chance in the last four games. It's going to get very real for West Virginia and Will Greer in November. They go to Texas. They get TCU at home. They go to Stillwater to play Oklahoma State and then Oklahoma at home. And if they were somehow able to make it out of that stretch, they would then play in the Big 12 championship game. I could very well see a scenario where West Virginia takes on Oklahoma in the season finale and then rematches with the Sooners a week later in the Big 12 championship game. I don't know how I feel about that. Looking at the way the Big 12 has laid out its schedule, playing a true round robin and then adding a championship game. To my mind, if you play a real round robin, why do you need the championship game? Everybody's played everybody. I get that some teams are going to have home field advantage. That's just the way it works. But to me, the Big 12 doesn't really know what it wants to do in figuring out a championship game. But West Virginia has an opportunity. West Virginia has an opportunity. The offense is terrific. Gary Jennings, David Sills, that's the best wide receiver duo in college football, bar none. There is no team in America with a better 1-2 punch at receiver than Gary Jennings and David Sills. They are outstanding, and West Virginia gets my number 8 slot. And really, they should be undefeated going into November. I can't imagine West Virginia really slipping out of the top 10 between now and then, unless some other teams just have some really thoroughly impressive wins ahead of them, because there's nothing on the Mountaineers' resume that's going to change them, my perception of them at least, between now and then. Number 7, Oklahoma. So the other team in the Big 12 here, they are, in my mind, the best team in the Big 12. They rebounded nicely. They struggled against Army, nearly lost to Army a week ago. Kyler Murray suspended for the first couple minutes of the game on Saturday against Baylor, comes in, scores 6 touchdowns. Sooners win 66-33. This offense is dynamite. There's no better offense in college football, from my mind, and I include Alabama in that conversation. I think the Sooners' offense is every bit as good as Alabama's. The problem is Oklahoma's defense needs a heck of a lot of work. Kyler Murray has his first Heisman stage this Saturday. They take on Texas, noon, Red River Shootout. It's going to be fireworks from both sides. Texas's offense has shown some flashes at moments, jumped out to an early 19-0 lead last week and then let Kansas State come back. But Oklahoma, okay, this is an opportunity for them. And before the season, I laid out the opportunity Kyler Murray had. I laid out the path for Kyler Murray to win the Heisman. It was to light up some good, not great teams in September. It's exactly what he did. He lit up Florida Atlantic. He lit up UCLA. He barely squeaked by Army, but did a nice job against Iowa State as well. So they played a bunch of good teams. Again, kind of like West Virginia. Played some good teams, no great teams. UCLA is a bad team, but at least on paper it looks nice because it's UCLA and it was on national TV. So we've had an opportunity now to see enough of Kyler Murray. He's been in some prominent games. None were all that difficult. They made Army look difficult, but actually, to his credit, to his benefit, the game wasn't on TV. It almost helped him, the fact that nobody in America could see that unless you were watching Periscope. So Kyler Murray is emerged as this kind of just off the pack, kind of right behind Tua Tagovailoa. Tua's getting most of the hype, most of the attention right now, but Kyler Murray has a chance on Saturday to make a difference. He has a chance to have that Heisman moment, the first one, in a huge game. Texas has rebounded after that loss to Maryland. They're 4-1. They're in the top 20. All eyes are going to be on that game, and I think Kyler Murray can light up Texas. I think Kyler Murray is going to absolutely obliterate the Longhorns defense. I think he's going to score 5-6 touchdowns. I think Oklahoma goes for over 50 points. This game is going to be one-sided. I like Oklahoma to win this game by at least a couple touchdowns, and I think that this is Kyler Murray's first chance to make a real Heisman statement. And for Tua at Alabama, this is the difference. And if you've been listening to the podcast, you've probably heard me say this before, but Alabama is not going to play in many games where Tua is going to have to make plays that are going to define their season. That's going to define his season. Kyler Murray is going to have defining moments, and that matters when you talk about the Heisman Trophy. I think a lot of people at the end of the season, if Alabama continues to do what they've done and they just beat teams like a drum, they're up by 28, they're up by 30. I mean, I understand the schedule is going to get tougher. I'm going to get to that in a little bit on the podcast. It doesn't matter. If Alabama is not in a tight game where Tua has to make a play to win it for Alabama, I think that's going to really hurt him in the race for the Heisman. And he still very well could win it because somebody else is going to have to take it from him. But I think Kyler Murray is that guy. Oklahoma is good, but they're going to play in some games where there's going to be some defining moments. This week could be one of them. West Virginia, certainly. You talk about playing TCU. There's just going to be some chances there. And for Tua, I think that he's going to have a hard time. Now, LSU does look like a legitimate competitor for them. We'll get into some other teams as well. Of course, Georgia, if they make it to the SEC title game, who am I kidding? When they make it to the SEC title game, that's going to help Tua's case. But right now, I think Kyler has a chance to maybe catch up and maybe even take the lead over Tua after this weekend. I like Kyler's chances. Number 6, I'm going to go with Kentucky. I'm going to go with Kentucky because on paper, they epitomize why I do these rankings. Nobody expected Kentucky to be here. Nobody. Yet here they are with 3 wins, all by double digits or more, against average or above average teams in the SEC. They beat Florida by 15. They, of course, last week beat Mississippi State 28-7. And then they win 24-10 over South Carolina. Those are all three pretty good teams. None of those are bad teams. Okay, I mean, say what you want about the way Mississippi State has played so far. I think Florida has turned out to be a pretty good team in year one under Dan Mullen. And South Carolina probably has struggled the most of any of them, but, I mean, they've taken on Georgia. And then, of course, this loss to Kentucky. I mean, you cannot tell me on paper that Kentucky's resume isn't better than the likes of Oklahoma or West Virginia, even Auburn, Penn State. I mean, they've won these games against good teams, and teams behind them have either lost or not played near the as tough of a schedule early on as the Wildcats. I don't expect Kentucky to keep this up. I don't think the Wildcats are going to win the SEC East. I don't think this is really going to change anything about the conference race. But I do think that so far they deserve to be ranked where they are. I think they deserve to be the number six team. I actually think they might have a case to be a little bit higher. I'm trying not to hold any sort of preseason expectation against them. And I was real tempted to put them ahead. I think if they were Georgia, they'd probably be ahead of the Bulldogs right now. If they had that G on the side of their helmet, I think it might be different. But I will say this. They beat South Carolina at home by 14. Georgia beat South Carolina in Columbia by 31. So I look at a common opponent there, same metric that the committee uses, and I think that's the difference why I just barely keep Georgia ahead of Kentucky. Georgia is going to be number five. But as far as Kentucky is concerned, they play Texas A&M on the road, a bye week, and then Vanderbilt, Missouri, and then that Georgia game. A&M's going to be tricky. I mean, they've already beaten three good teams, so I mean, why can't they knock off A&M? But going into College Station, that's going to be a really critical game for them. If they were 6-0 going into the bye week, they then get Vanderbilt, that could be 7-0. They then get Missouri on the road, another tricky game. So the A&M and Missouri games, two tough road games. Those are two big hurdles to try and get past before you're 8-0 going into Georgia. But somehow Kentucky was 8-0 hosting Georgia. That game is in Lexington on November 3rd. Boy, you're talking about something special there. And remember, 2007, Kentucky beat LSU in Lexington. Andre Woodson, shout out to big number three in blue, Andre Woodson. That team knocked off LSU, who ended up winning the national championship. And Kentucky was a team that they finally got into the top five at that point, top 10 at least. This feels maybe like that year. And Benny Snell is a guy who deserves to be in the mix for the Heisman, and probably will if they get to 8-0. That would be absolutely special. It'll be the biggest story in college football. Number five is Georgia. Now, the Georgia Bulldogs, again, barely, just barely better than Kentucky at this point. And I put a lot into that South Carolina game. You got a common opponent there. Georgia went in to Columbia. I was at that game. The speed, the power of Georgia was overwhelming. That was probably the most complete performance that Georgia has had so far this season. You talk about a team that kind of sputtered against Missouri defensively and then on offense really never really got it going fully against Tennessee this past weekend. So that South Carolina game, they win 38-7. Kentucky won 24-10, so a 14-point game, and that was at home for Kentucky. So Georgia going on the road, I give them a little bit more credit. It's very close. It's very close between those two, but I'll give the Bulldogs the slight heads or advantage right now. And here's the thing about Georgia. Justin Fields is starting to get some real playing time in some meaningful games for them. He was one of two passing, but he did have two rushing touchdowns against Tennessee. You see what the added dimension he brings to this team. Kirby Smart was kind of bringing Fields along a little bit slowly early in the season. Now he's starting to use him in some packages. And Jake Fromm, I think, lost a little bit of his rhythm because of that. And Fromm didn't play all that great. He lost the ball a couple times against the Vols as well. And I think that hurts Georgia in the long run. I understand why they want to give Fields an opportunity. To me, I think you got to pick one and go with it. The difference between Georgia right here and Clemson, because they're in very similar situations where you've got a freshman quarterback who's probably your most talented guy, is I think that Georgia, two things. One, has a tougher schedule. And when you have a tougher schedule, I think it's easier to play it safe and go with the more experienced guy in Jake Fromm. And Jake Fromm's a terrific player. Got him in the national title game. You could argue should have won the national title game for Georgia. So I think the twofold answer here why Georgia should stick with Fromm as opposed to going with Fields, they have a tough enough schedule where I don't think you could run the risk of playing a freshman quarterback. Georgia probably needs to run the table in the regular season, so that if they lose to Alabama in the SEC title game, they could still make the playoff. And then, of course, the other aspect of this is Jake Fromm has gotten you there. You've gotten to the national title game, and you've come within, I mean, an inch of beating Alabama. Meanwhile, in Clemson's case, Trevor Lawrence has a much easier schedule in front of him. Clemson should run the table easily. They should. Who knows that they will. And then you don't know that Kelly Bryant can even contend with Alabama because you saw it a year ago. So those are the two differences there. That's why I would actually stick with Jake Fromm. And I like Fields. I would use him in very, very limited duty just because you start to affect rhythm. You start that. Say what you want about the fact that two quarterbacks are a popular thing now. I really don't think it's as successful as some people are making it out to be. I think it really does hurt the rhythm of the team, the rhythm of the quarterback specifically. So Georgia number five, they've got to start playing better football. Kirby Smart said it as well. They've got some big games coming up on their schedule, but for right now, I do think they belong at number five. Number four is LSU. I will admit, I was not buying in on LSU. I didn't see it. I know they beat Auburn. I know they beat Miami. To me, I saw an Auburn team that has had its own issues on offense. I saw a Miami team that's had a ton of issues on offense. And I said, you know, maybe we're overrating LSU just a little bit. Maybe we're giving the Tigers too much credit for beating two brand-name, big-time programs, but two teams that have really struggled early on. And honestly, I don't think I was wrong about that. But what LSU did on Saturday night against Ole Miss, who has their problems of their own, especially on defense, was thoroughly impressive. They go in, they beat Ole Miss handily. Joe Burrow, 292 passing yards. He ends up accounting for a whole sort of touchdowns. What was it, four total touchdowns here? Yeah, 292 passing yards, 96 rushing yards. As I pull up the numbers right there, that was outstanding. That was the best game he's played as an LSU Tiger, and he deserves credit for that. 45-16 was the final score. LSU, to me, has an outstanding resume. Now, the Auburn win looking a little worse as the Tigers kind of struggle last week. So I'm tempted to put LSU higher than four. I could see the argument why they belong higher than four. I mean, of course, two wins over ranked teams in Miami and Auburn, but I will put them at four for now, and they've got an opportunity next week at Florida and then Georgia at home. So the next 2 weeks are going to be a defining stretch for them. If they can get by Florida on the road, then they get that chance to be undefeated taking on Georgia. And this is the thing about the Bulldogs. Seems to be a recurring theme. A lot of teams, these upstart teams, and I don't want to refer to LSU as an upstart, but these teams that are really starting to gain some momentum here midway through the season, they're going to run into the Bulldogs, and Georgia's going to have to be ready. So LSU hosts Georgia in 2 weeks, but they got to get through Florida first. That's going to be a nice one this weekend, and that game is in Gainesville. Number three, Notre Dame. And boy, another team that I was not buying in on prior to last week. Notre Dame, they beat Michigan in week one. Now, Michigan played about as poorly as they could play in that season opener in South Bend, and Notre Dame still had to get a stop, force a turnover in the last minute of the game to keep Michigan from tying it up. That's why I was a little skeptical of Notre Dame. I was even still skeptical of them after they got past Wake Forest because the Demon Deacons defense is a mess. So I wasn't sold on Notre Dame until I saw them take on Stanford. I've been a big Stanford fan. I was proven wrong on Saturday night because Notre Dame outplayed Stanford for four quarters. And I know that game was close. It was 14-all, second half. Looked like Stanford was in it, but the score was not an indication of how the game was going. Notre Dame was moving the ball at will, just couldn't get the touchdowns they were looking for. Dexter Williams, the new running back for Notre Dame, comes back after a four-game suspension, runs for 161 yards and a touchdown. Of course, Ian Book now at quarterback. He goes for 278 and four total touchdowns. This offense is taking off. And 2 weeks ago, Ian Book wasn't in at quarterback. Dexter Williams wasn't the running back. In the first three games of the season, Notre Dame scored 70 points total. Total in three games. That's about 23 points a game. In the last two, they've scored 94. So they're averaging almost 50 points a game since Ian Book has entered into the lineup. And now Dexter Williams is in there as well. So this Notre Dame offense is really starting to pick up speed. And you saw that for four quarters against Stanford. They have Virginia Tech this week in Blacksburg. Primetime games is a tough environment for the Irish to go into. And here's where we're going to learn something about the Irish is what do they look like in a big spot on the road? They went to Wake Forest, not even the same, not even remotely comparable. They've got to go into Blacksburg. Their two best wins right now are the Michigan win and the Stanford win. And both of those wins came at home in South Bend. So this is a different animal now going into Blacksburg, a Virginia Tech team that suddenly looks potent on offense, which we'll get into plenty on Wednesday. But I believe that Notre Dame has the makings of a playoff team. And there's going to be a lot of controversy and a lot of debate about this Irish team, especially if they were to, let's say, lose to Virginia Tech or lose a game at some point in the next few weeks and finish 11-1, because they're going to have all sorts of quality wins. And people are going to rip them for not being in a conference, and that they're going to be wrong. It's going to be ridiculous, but it's going to happen. If Notre Dame goes undefeated, they're going to be in the playoff, period. It's going to happen. You're going to miss out on at least one other, well, I guess two technically Power 5 conferences are going to miss out on the playoff, maybe even three. If you start thinking about two SEC teams plus Notre Dame getting in, that only leaves one playoff spot for four conferences. That could be crazy, but it could happen. Number two, Alabama. And hold on now. How on earth is Alabama number two? Here's the thing. Alabama's resume still has room to improve. They haven't hit the meat of their schedule yet. And while they've been thoroughly dominant against the teams they played so far, it's been Louisville, it's been Louisiana Lafayette, it's been who I don't even know who else they've played. Their games have been, I have watched maybe 20 minutes of Alabama this season because it's over 5 minutes into the game. Ole Miss, 62-7. Texas A&M, 45-23. They have not played a ranked team yet this season, and the only two ranked teams left on their schedule, LSU and Auburn. I do think that they get a little bit of a bad rap for having an easy schedule. Now, I know it hasn't been that daunting to this point. Some other teams have played tougher schedules. I don't think this schedule is that much easier than what West Virginia has faced so far this season. And nobody talks about West Virginia facing an easy schedule. Alabama is a little bit of a victim of their own success because they make these teams look so bad when they play them that you think that they're basically playing a cupcake schedule. A&M's okay. I mean, the Arkansas game makes me a little bit more concerned about the Aggies, but again, A&M took Clemson to the wire. And, of course, Ole Miss has struggled a little bit more than we expected. But even Ole Miss knocked off Texas Tech, who then knocked off Oklahoma State a few weeks later. So, I mean, there's some decent teams on this schedule so far. The reality is when they take on Missouri in a few weeks and then LSU and Auburn in the last month of the season, Alabama's schedule is going to look fine. Okay, people can rip it all they want. Their schedule is going to look fine. Of course, they're going to take on Georgia in all likelihood in the SEC title game. They'll have taken on at least three top 25 teams, maybe even three top 15 teams. Not a lot of teams in the country can say that. So Alabama's schedule, not an issue for me by the season's end. As of right now, I still say that there are other teams that have taken on tougher schedules. One team in particular that's going to be ranked ahead of them. But this Alabama team right now, victim of its own success as much as anything. This team is averaging over 50 points a game. You've essentially taken a Nick Saban defense and given him a Big 12 offense. It's frightening. I don't see them losing a game. I don't know what else you want me to say about Alabama. They're going to run the table. They're going to play Georgia in the SEC championship game. The big storyline, I think, for the rest of the season in college football is which team is going to be built to beat Alabama? Which team is best equipped to beat the Tide? Because you're seeing all sorts of teams essentially game planning for that moment, essentially game planning for that opportunity. It's why Kelly Bryant's not starting at Clemson right now. Trevor Lawrence is the starting quarterback at Clemson because he gives them an opportunity to potentially beat Alabama if he's able to develop. He's got a long way to go, but that's why Trevor Lawrence is the guy. Justin Fields is getting snaps at Georgia because they know in Athens they might need a guy like Justin Fields to be able to contend with Alabama. He is the more talented guy. That's why you're seeing maybe younger guys who in years past you would not see getting opportunities all of a sudden playing meaningful snaps. It's because they know you need the most talented guys on the field. It's not about experience. It's not about risk management. It's about talent. You got to have talent to beat Alabama, and that's why you see those teams right behind Alabama trying to make changes to their team that you wouldn't normally see. So there you go. No shocker. Number one is Ohio State. I just gave it away. The Buckeyes, to me, have the number one resume in college football. Now, I heard Clay Travis talking on his radio show today about Notre Dame having a better resume on paper than Ohio State. They beat Michigan, and then they beat Stanford. Yes, they did. TCU, for all we know, roughly about the same as Stanford. Maybe a little bit worse than the Cardinal, but Ohio State had to go into Dallas. That was, at worst, a neutral game. It might even have been an Ohio State home game. I get it, but they traveled, beat TCU, And then Penn State was in Happy Valley. That's tougher than anything Notre Dame's had to do. Notre Dame got Michigan and Stanford at home. Ohio State going on the road into the toughest environment in the country so far for a top 10 team. And they won. Now, it took them every last second to get that win. They came back from two touchdowns down to knock off Penn State. But they did it. And look, when you go on the road against a top 10 team in that environment, coming away with a win is so impressive. And that's why I have Ohio State at number one right now. But if you ask me, could the Buckeyes beat Alabama on a neutral field tomorrow? The answer is no. Alabama has so fewer questions right now. Ohio State struggled to move the ball in the first half against a Penn State defense. That same thing would happen against Alabama. I do think that Ohio State's ceiling is probably the closest to Alabama's ceiling right now. Georgia is right there. I think Dwayne Haskins makes the difference for Ohio State to me over Georgia. Moving forward, I think Haskins has the ability to make bigger plays with his arm, and Ohio State has similar weapons, maybe even more weapons, in terms of pure speed on the outside than Georgia does. And J.K. Dobbins is every bit the running back that Georgia has, and I love Georgia's running backs. I love Holyfield. I love DeAndre Swift. I think they've got so much talent in that backfield, but Ohio State is right there. Ohio State can say that they go pound for pound with the Bulldogs at the skill positions. Defensive line for Ohio State, better than Georgia's. They're missing Nick Bosa until November, probably. But once they get Nick Bosa back, that defense is lights out on the front four. They've got terrific speed in the secondary. Talk about Kendall Sheffield, Jeffrey Okuda. Like, they've got guys who are future first-round picks. This team is right there with Alabama, I think. And I didn't really believe it about 2 weeks ago. I looked back, I watched the TCU game again, and then I've seen this team, and I know a lot about some of these players. I think that their ceiling is there. Now, they haven't come close to that ceiling. That's the difference. Their ceiling is not, or they haven't reached their ceiling, I should say. But that ceiling to me is as close to Alabama as anybody else in the country. If you had to ask me to bet on one team only that could beat Alabama this year, I would put it on Ohio State. I think the Crimson Tide are going to win it all. But I think Ohio State's got a shot. I think Ohio State has a better shot than anyone else. And Urban Meyer's done it before. He's beaten Nick Saban. They did it a few years ago in the playoff. I think they could do it again. Dwayne Haskins is that dark horse Heisman guy. Wasn't a great performance by him. The defense struggled against Trace McSorley, rather. But I think Ohio State can get there. And they've got a lot of room to grow. But in this Big Ten, that doesn't look quite as tough as it did before the season. I mean, Michigan has now not only lost to Notre Dame, but struggled against Northwestern. Michigan State has looked nowhere close to the team we thought they would be. They're just outside the top 20 right now. And then they've already beaten Penn State. So this team is probably going to at least get to the Michigan game unbeaten in my mind. And we'll see what happens against the Wolverines. But Ohio State has a very good shot right now at one loss or fewer. As long as Ohio State has one loss or less, they win the Big Ten. They're going to make it into the playoff, and they will get a shot at Alabama, you would think. So the Buckeyes right now have the best resume on paper, a lot of that because of the win at Penn State, but I don't think they're the best team in the country. There's the difference between the AP top 10, maybe the JP top 10. I'm looking at resumes. It will change every week to week. This could look a lot different. So make sure you guys listen every week, and I want to hear your thoughts. So make sure you tweet me or follow me on Twitter. Check out the website as well. Leave a comment on the site. I would love to know what you guys think about the JP Top 10. Anybody you think I missed? Anybody too high, too low? Let me know. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast as well. You can go on to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. Check it out anywhere you want. Subscribe. Tell your friends about it and leave that review. 5 stars. You got to tell me your favorite player, though. You got to let me know, because this has been the best thing that's happened this season. I love reading those names every week. You've got some great ones. Like I said, Lusaka Polite, I think that's the favorite in the clubhouse right now. That one is excellent. And if you can top it, leave it in your name in the review. 5 stars on Apple. Wait until I hit 150. $25 gift card coming your way if you have the best name. Thanks for listening, guys. I'll be back on Wednesday night. You might get it Thursday morning. Kyle Bailey might even be joined by another special guest as well to talk ACC football with you guys. We'll talk Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence, Virginia Tech, Florida State struggles, what to make of Syracuse. Plenty to talk to in the ACC, so make sure you guys download and subscribe for that podcast as well. Until then, I will see you on Wednesday night.